You're listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
Now, side by side, it looks like the Xbox is still a better value. But, I mean, as far as the exclusives go, I don't know, man. Yeah. Like, I'm kind of drawn a little more towards the PlayStation side.
How are you quantifying value?
The games. I'm talking about the console exclusives. Like, I'm going to want to play Final Fantasy. I'm going to want to play Resident Evil 8.
Yeah.
Now, I know Resident Evil 8 is going to be on both.
As will Final Fantasy, right?
They've got some... No, Final Fantasy, the console exclusive, is to PlayStation. So Final Fantasy 16 will only be on PlayStation 5 and PC. Really?
Have they ever done that before?
No, this is the first time.
Wow, which means, Sony shelled out a shit ton of money to Square to
they did.
Get the license for that.
Sony shelled out a lot of money for a bunch of these. After like 27 years, they're finally doing a new Abe Oddworld game. Like, remember Abe's Odyssey?
Remember that dude, the little alien, the blue alien-looking dude?
Yeah, and this one looks fucking killer.
Everything looks amazing.
So good.
Even the little Big Planet spinoff that they're
Sackboy.
Doing. Yeah.
The Sackboy one.
Looks really good.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. I'm pretty stoked about it. The price tag I'm not too happy about, but
well, we knew that. Right. And you can get the $400 version that doesn't have a disc player. You don't need that, right? Everybody downloads their games nowadays anyway.
I'd rather have the media. Yeah. I'd rather have the media player. Yeah.
Now, why is that? Because you're worried that, like, someday they could pull it off online, or you have an issue.
Yeah, well, that's what they did. I don't know if you knew about this. Like, that there's a Transformers game called Devastation that's based on the old 80s animated style Transformers.
No way.
And they pulled it off the shop. They pulled it off the eShop for Xbox. And when they pulled it off the shop, they also pulled it out of people's libraries.
Oh, what?
Yeah, they pulled it. And so the only way you can play that game is if you have a physical copy of it.
Why? I'm sure it came down to licensing, right? Like, that's usually what happens. That's why I wanted to get the Ninja Turtles. They had the Ninja Turtles arcade game for Xbox for a while. But I got to it too late, and you can't download it. I think if you bought it, you can re-download it, but they're not. Yeah. They won't sell it to you new.
Dude, that's a shame.
Same thing with the X-Men arcade game, too.
That sucks. Yeah, I have the X-Men one on every system that I own.
Yes.
X-Men.
X-Men. Still got to watch all those movies that you hooked
me up
with.
That I downloaded for you.
Yeah, man, the whole X-Men.
Have you not seen any of them?
No. Well, I've seen a few of them, but I let Joe know that. I was like, you know how there's basically like 11 that I haven't seen all of them, and they've made so many different ones, and people are always like, yeah, man, X-Men, this one is always better than that one. I'm like, yeah.
Well, then, it is. Then trying to explain to Tessa, like, well, you know, X-Men 8 is actually Deadpool. Like, Deadpool is like the 8th in the series.
That's true.
You know, trying to break things down like that.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what? It's like the Rambos all over again.
If you were to recommend just one X-Men movie for our young Tess to watch, which one would it be? I can tell you what mine is.
That's tough, because I love X2. I think X2 is such a good movie. I'd probably go with X2 just because I think it balances all the characters really well while kind of putting Wolverine front and center. It's still not just the Wolverine show.
Yeah.
But I also love Days of Future Past.
That's
like, if we're talking team films, I think X-Men 2 and Days of Future Past are the best of those. But if you're talking like just the best film in the X-Men universe, Logan. It's got to be Logan.
I have seen Logan. So,
there you go.
Okay, that's actually good. But so I mean, X2 and the other
Days of Future Past.
Days of Future Past. What's the difference in both of them? Like, you know, the storyline, I guess.
Well, go ahead, Joe.
Go ahead, Joel. Oh, all right. So X2 obviously is the sequel to the first movie. They're still kind of getting their feet wet making team superhero movies at this point, but they're definitely a lot more comfortable in like the mythos of the X-Men universe. Like the filmmakers, the cast, you could tell that they got a little more comfortable. They kind of retconned out Storm's accent. So she just speaks with just a regular
"Hey y'all,
American
I'm Halle Berry."
Accent. Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, it's fine because it works better. It's a good, deep story about being who you are and accepting yourself,
True.
Which is always a really nice theme that the X-Men have going. That's why it's so disappointing at the end of X3 when Rogue is like, I've taken the cure. Like, yeah. What? You did what?
spoiler
so what alert. Happened? The thing about X-Men Days of Future Past, yeah. It's where they kind of like, they started getting wacky with like the timeline of those movies. And this was their attempt to try to clean things up, which kind of failed. But at the time, it was a really good effort. But what it does is it takes place in the future, where the remaining surviving mutants who are being hunted by these Sentinel robots, like it starts off with them meeting up and they're being hunted by Sentinel robots, and they kind of like hole up in this this complex. And what they do is they're going to send Wolverine's consciousness back in time to like the 70s to stop this this guy Bolivar Trask, Peter Dinklage, from creating the Sentinel robots. And so like they send him back. Yeah, they send him back into his old body, and he has to now convince like Charles Xavier, who'd kind of given up on the X-Men. He has to try to convince them to kind of him and Magneto to work together to stop this guy. And it's really, really cool, because as this is happening, there's that fight. This fight is still going on in the future where the Sentinels are trying to kill the X-Men. And like you see as they're like kind of breaking down the defenses one by one, killing the remaining X-Men as they try to make their way to Wolverine. And can Wolverine get this thing stopped like in the past before his body dies in the future?
Yeah, it's like Back to the Future, but with X-Men.
But with X-Men, it's super good. It's
and it's like a merging of the two, because you know they did like prequel movies with an all young cast. So it's kind of it was basically like a crossover episode. You get the old cast, so you get your Patrick Stewart,
bring everything together,
but you still get your James McAvoy. That's right.
Oh, yeah.
You got your James McAvoy, my Patrick Stewart.
You got your Patrick Stewart, my James McAvoy.
So is it safe to say that basically Wolverine is just the best X-Men?
Yes.
He's the guy.
Yes.
He just he always has.
I don't know why. Why are we even don't even ask. Just bring it. No, he's. He is absolutely the best. I mean, it depends on who you ask, but I mean, yet I name my kid James Logan. Both of those names are Wolverine's names.
True. That's very true.
Yeah.
When did you break that to Sarah, by the way?
I broke that to Sarah. Well, she knew with the middle name. She knew like Logan was a Wolverine name. It was probably about a year later when I broke it to her. I was like, look, either way I win, because Wolverine's real name is James Howlett. So
I can picture you sitting next to her on the couch, like watching the movie, and she's like piecing the, hey.
Hey.
I mean, that's okay. It's like, hey, would you rather he be named Wolverine? He could be Wolverine. Exactly.
That's true. Actually, that'd be pretty awesome.
We almost, his middle name was almost Kylo.
Oh,
as in Ren?
As in Ren. We almost named him James Kylo.
So you were going to name him after, you're going to name your only son after a character who kills his father?
Yeah.
All right. Bold choice.
And then redeems himself through the Force.
Oh. All right. I see where you're coming from. Wait, that's not how the Force works.
That's not how the Force works. I love that moment. You guys see anything good? Do anything good this past week?
So I've been watching, as I'm sure Tess has, it's Halloween season. I don't care. It's only September 15th. We are celebrating every holiday to its fullest.
We are.
And, it is officially begun. Put one on that is on Netflix now, that Jenna had not seen, but I was like, oh, okay, I kind of remember liking this, and it feels and looks like a Halloween movie, so can't be all that bad, right? Punched up Tim Burton's Sleepy Hollow from 1999, starring Johnny Depp Christina Ricci, and basically the entire cast of Harry Potter, or at least a good portion of the adults. And
half the cast of Beetlejuice.
Yeah, yes, there you go, the Tim Burton regulars. It's still a B+, maybe B-. It's worth it for the, like if you want a Halloween movie that feels like Halloween, like this is it. You got a headless horseman running around. You got pumpkins and skulls and blowing leaves because it's fall perpetually there. And just it feels like Halloween, and have really a lot of fun with like the beheadings. Like other movies, when they behead somebody, so many beheadings in this film, by the way. But usually, you know, they like cut away, or you'll see it in a silhouette. Not this one. In 1999, Tim Burton decided you're going to see all of the beheadings like full on the camera, well lit, and he has a lot of fun with that. So it's fun from that point of view, but it's also kind of like a cop crime procedural, and not a very good one. So
yeah, I remember seeing that in the theater and kind of dozing off at some point.
I did too. I fell asleep.
Yeah. Which do you prefer? Do you prefer Sleepy Hollow or do you prefer The Legend of Ichabod Crane, the animated version?
The Disney one with, well, I mean, one is almost 2 hours long and the other one is the 15 minute short. So I'm going to have to go. No, I love the old Ichabod Crane.
Yeah.
I don't Ichabod know. A lot of, they turned what was basically just kind of like this sniveling coward. They turn him into like, you know, he's like CSI Sleepy Hollow all of a sudden. He's got these contraptions and he's still kind of a coward, but he ultimately is a hero in the end. And that was never really what Ichabod Crane was. So if you're a Sleepy Hollow purist, this will not delight you. But, you know, it's on Netflix. Put it on for the Halloween season.
Maybe one of you out there that is a Sleepy Hollow purist.
But yeah, it's got some slow parts in the middle. It puts the sleepy in Sleepy Hollow.
Oh, what have you been doing, Tess?
Oh, well, you know, I finally finished Kimmy Schmidt, and I checked out the interactive movie that, you know, they have on there as well. So I did that. That took me a while because I messed it up a couple times. But I finally got through, and they're like, yeah, but it doesn't seem like it doesn't seem like Titus and Jacqueline are happy. So you might want to go back and do that again. So I was like, oh, shit. All right. So after about the third time, I was like, let me just go back and just do every single thing to see what happens after everything. But I finally finished it, and it was pretty good. I was like, this is a good end. This is a good end to this whole series and everything with Kimmy Schmidt. So that was good. And I started this show on HBO, though, called Lovecraft Country.
That's supposed to be good, right?
I'm only about like 30. I'm only about like 20 minutes into the first episode, but it's been very good so far. And I can see why people have been talking about it. It's kind of got like a weird sci-fi aspect to it. There's like aliens and stuff in it. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that's cool. I need to check that out. I've got a lot of people that I know that whose opinions I trust. Not you guys. Are saying that I'm kidding. They say that it's really good, so I definitely have to check that out. Any of you guys, have you guys seen the new Bill and Ted yet? Have you taken the time to check it out?
No, I was going to do that before I started watching the movie of the week. I was actually going to start with, because you know you gave me all three of them, so I was going to start from the first one and then watch the second one, but I haven't yet. So that's what I'm going to do. Really
cool.
I do want to see that. It's been a hard sell with the missus after having revisited. Well, they've been taking advantage of the publicity, right, and showing the first two on TV. So we've kind of been catching parts of it there. And I don't think she ever saw Bogus Journey. So we were kind of revisiting some of that. I still stand by my assessment that is not a good film. Super silly.
Oh, man. I'm such an apologist for that second one.
It turns out, I think I'm in the minority. I think people prefer the second one. If you took a poll, I know. I was surprised too.
Wow.
They're both silly. And so I'm sure this third one will be silly. I'm sure I'm going to like it. There's a lot of stuff to watch.
If you like the first two, I mean, if you like the first one, you're gonna like this third one. I haven't seen any new movies.
No.
What I have been doing, I've been Twitch streaming some Kingdom Hearts.
I know. Now that I'm following our Twitch handle at Next Wave Joe.
At Next Wave Joe. There you
go. Yeah.
Follow him on Twitch. Did you get to your 100 subscribers, by the way?
No, dude. I'm barely at 26.
Okay.
Which is fine. You know what? I really haven't. I haven't really been earning any. I've just been kind of playing, not even speaking on the channel. Just been playing the game, and I know that's boring for people to watch. But
no,
I've just been playing through it. I'm about. I think I've got all but one of the worlds still to go on, I have just one of the worlds still to go on Kingdom Hearts, and I'm about to wrap that up. My journey through Final Fantasy stalled out just a tad. Because I've started playing this Final Fantasy IV, The After Years, which was like some kind of supplementary, some material that they put together. Like, I think it was like the 15th or 20th anniversary of the game that they ended up putting out this, like, The After Years. And it's like each of the characters gets its own little tale, and it's like a three to 4 hour thing. And it culminates into one final mission that's like another 10 hours long. And I'm just like, oh my God, it's such a grind. And I probably would have liked it more if I didn't start playing it right after finishing Final Fantasy IV. like take a step away from that world and then kind of come back. But instead I dove right into it and I'm just like, oh, we've been here already. We've been doing this already. So I'm kind of pushing through that. What I have seen are a couple of trailers that has me excited for what's coming up very soon.
Oh yeah,
You guys, I'm sure, saw the new Mandalorian trailer, right?
Hell yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
sir. Man.
What's exciting mostly about that is you know that everything they show was probably from like the first one or maybe two episodes. So there's still a bunch of... I watched it with Jenna and she was like, well, I thought Ahsoka was supposed... Is that how you say her name?
Anakin's
Ahsoka. Where's Ahsoka? I thought she was supposed to be there. And I'm like, well, they're not gonna spoil that in the trailer.
She's gonna be there. Yeah. I mistook wrestler Sasha Banks for Ahsoka Tano for Rosario Dawson.
I thought so
too. First time I watched the trailer, I was like, oh, there's Rosario Dawson.
Why is she have makeup on?
I was like, oh nope, that's Sasha Banks. Holy crap! But I thought they were both supposed to be playing like different versions of the character. But I mean, we'll see. I'm so excited. Yep. The thing that the Mandalorian has going for it, that it seemed to have going for it more than like these new films that came out, is just like there's just such an element of fun. Like from the moment that the trailer opens, there's such a Firefly feel to it that the ship's breaking apart and they're just trying to make it to the next planet. And like just this old Western sci-fi kind of thing that's happening. So I'm excited about that. They released a teaser for the Christmas Chronicles 2 with Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn.
Wow, already?
What? Yeah, already? It's been 2 years.
I thought that was just last year that happened.
No, dude, it's like 2 or 3 years.
Two years ago now? All right.
Yeah. So we've got that.
Listen to our Christmas Chronicles episode. I think we both enjoyed that one, Joe.
Oh, dude, yeah, totally. I'm looking forward to this next one. I think that's all. Excited for the end of the week. The new Super Mario 3D All-Stars comes out, so I'll be jumping into that.
Hell yeah.
And in a couple of weeks, you got that new Star Wars Squadrons game that's coming out. And so I've definitely been a lot more video game centric lately.
Mm-hmm. We should like do a podcast about video games.
If only there was a movie that's kind of revolves around video games that we enjoy, we could talk about that, right?
Look at you. Nice segue. Now, help me out here, Joe.
I'm the Next Big Radio Network. My name's Joe.
Mine's Joel.
This is where we talk about movies. Sometimes they're good movies, sometimes bad movies, no matter what the case. Every week we will watch a movie and then come back here and talk about it with you, our lovely Editing Bay listeners, and with each other. Please join the discussion. Go to facebook.com/editingbay or on Facebook, find that search bar, type in the Editing Bay. It's going to bring up an image of the woman with the bleeding eyes. Click on that, and that's our little corner of the web, and you could talk to us there. And if you have ideas for movies for us to watch in the future, you could put your suggestions there. We'll add them to the list. And Joel, I cut you off. What were you getting ready to say?
Oh, I was just gonna dive into some Tron talk and try to figure out the lineage of, I don't know whether the movie, the 1982 movie, came out first or the game, or were they kind of developed in tandem?
They were developed at the same time. The game came out as a marketing tool for the movie, basically.
That's what I thought.
And how cool that, like, here's the thing. The fact that, like, we are so used to, especially in, like, the 80s and early 90s, even late 90s, that, like, video game movie tie-ins have always been historically terrible.
Awful, yes.
Yet this game that they made, the Tron game that they made, is such an era-defining game. Like, I was thinking about that today as I was watching this movie. Like, The game itself, when like Sam goes into Flynn's arcade and he sees the Tron game, I'm like, this game is it, the fact that it's so good and like people were like clamoring. I loved it, man. I think you, again, like you being in the minority, I think you're in the minority on this.
All right,
I think
fair enough.
Tron is fantastic. And, you know, I put it up there with like kind of Disney's record of making games that tie into movies, not so much adaptations, but tie-ins. Like when Wreck-It Ralph was first released, they did a tour with a Fix-It Felix arcade game that they had brought up to the radio station. I think I told you about this. They brought a Fix-It Felix arcade cabinet up to the radio station and let it live there for like a week and a half. And I ended up getting the high score on that thing.
Of course.
Champion at the radio station. No one was ever able to beat it. But yeah, like I thought that was so cool, and it's a fun game. It's got the basics. It's like, man, this is how you do it. So it's kind of fun to me that like Tron in its own way kind of defined the era of gaming at that time, and to be able to go back and look at it from the first film and look at it in the second film, it's nice. It's a nice little bit of legacy that, like, they built this game as, you know, kind of a character in itself of the first Tron film, but also to promote it.
Yeah, it certainly, like, it. Everybody knows the imagery, whether they played the game or not. And it certainly had style.
And the sounds.
The sounds right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I just don't remember it being very fun to play, but maybe I should revisit it once again.
Well, I mean, you're right about that, Joel. Like, I've never really played Tron, but I definitely have seen it referenced in many of movies and shows over the years.
Yeah.
But so that's why this was fun for me to be able to dive into this. And I did go back and watch the 82 film.
Oh, no.
Did you? Oh, that's awesome.
Yes. I mean, I needed some references to what was going on in the 2010 film.
Yeah. You do need that. In fact, I watched the original last night and then watched the new one today. Just so that way I'd be fresh for this discussion. We are talking about 2010's Tron Legacy, directed by Joseph Kosinski, who gave us the Tom Cruise movie Oblivion. If you're familiar with the Taco Bell Web of Fries TV campaign, he directed all of those.
And
also the director of the upcoming Top Gun Maverick.
That's right.
Now, people talk about how Tron Legacy was a failure at the box office, and that's not true. We talked about this last week. The movie was made for $150 million, but brought in $410 million. Like, this movie is super successful.
Yep. Super
successful. But it wasn't as successful as they wanted it to be, and it wasn't as critically successful as they wanted it to be. And that's why ultimately, like, plan hinged on the success of one other movie, and that was John Carter, which was based on the – who was it? Edgar Rice – is that who wrote that? The original I can't remember the name of the guy who wrote it.
Oh, look it up.
But yeah, it's the old, like, the Princess of Mars, about a man from Earth that gets transported to Mars. And because, like, kind of like the Superman thing, the way that the planet affects his physiology, suddenly he kind of has superhuman powers. But Disney had been trying to make this John Carter movie for, like, decades. Walt Disney himself wanted to make this movie back in, like, the 50s.
Oh, really?
And they never had the opportunity to make it. And so they were like, all right, look. Because they're kind of in the same vein, as long as John Carter's successful, we'll go ahead and greenlight a third Tron film. And it wasn't. John Carter was not successful, which is a shame because I love that film. Guess what I forgot to do? Uh-oh. I didn't get other movies that were released in 2010.
Oh, let's do it.
Yeah, I look forward to that every single week, man. And this is a good year. I graduated in 2010.
Did you really?
High school. Yeah, from high school.
2010. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. So some movies that came out in 2010. We got The Town with Ben Affleck.
Yes.
We also got The Losers, Inception, Book of
nice.
Eli.
Yeah.
Also got that Joaquin Phoenix, I'm Still Here. Easy A, Due Date, The Other Guys, Get Him to the Greek, Date Night, The Sorcerer's Apprentice. Also Centurion. We had Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief.
Fucking blatant Harry Potter ripoff. Everybody was trying to have a Harry Potter franchise back then.
Everybody. Did you ever see Percy Jackson?
No. I ain't seen that bullshit.
No.
It's a good movie. I like it. I like
you like Alexander Daddario in it. That's what you like about it. I'm on to you.
Sure do. Hey, man, did you ever see her season of True Detective?
I have it saved on a hard drive somewhere.
That's good. All right. So we also saw, speaking of garbage, Jonah Hex came out that year. We also had The A-Team. And Joel, a little movie called Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
What?
Came out
you don't have to tell me. I know it. Yeah, pretty good year, man. 2010.
It was.
Yeah, not bad at all. The film is... I don't want to open up onto this because I feel like everybody kind of knows where I'm going to stand on this movie.
Yes.
I loved it when I first saw it. In fact, I loved it so much. I forced friends to come, like, I would pay for their tickets to go see it at the theater and, like, just here, I'll pay for your ticket. Let's go see this movie again. I was so jazzed because, the movie theater that was closest to me at the time was in Plano off of Legacy Drive. It was called the Cinemark Legacy. So I was like, hey, man, we're going to go see Tron Legacy at the Legacy.
Oh,
yeah. That's cool.
So I love this movie. I still love this movie. I do see the faults that are there. And there's obviously one huge glaring one. but other than that, I mean, what a spectacle. What a spectacle for the eyes, the soundtrack. Like, this is... like audio, visual, like everything. Like this movie is what I want a movie to be. It's when you can take a movie and take out all the dialogue and just have it be the soundtrack and the visuals, and you would still be super happy with it. I would call that a success.
This is one of those movies that, like, you know, when you go into Best Buy, when people used to do that, and you want to go test out the sound system, you know, they have the little room where you test out. This was like the sample disc that they would put in.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's like, this is going to push the visual and audio to the limits, and we're going to sell that $10,000 plasma to this sucker.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. So I don't know who I want to go with first, because I get a feeling that, like, I feel like this is not exactly Joel's cup of tea.
Well, can I suggest? Well, yes, I picked it because Joe was kind enough to hand his pick to me. So I wanted to do something and I wanted to revisit it too, because I wasn't too keen on it initially in theaters, and I thought, you know, Joe's really been talking it up. One of his favorite films. He always brings it up. And I remember liking the visuals and the sound. The score is fantastic. So I figured it was a good time. I, unlike you two, did not go back and revisit the first Tron. And I kind of wish I had, because I remember I found myself forgetting a lot of kind of the rules of this world. So since you're both fresh off of that original Tron as well, can we maybe start there and kind of set up this world?
Okay. Yeah. So the grid.
The grid.
The grid.
The grid.
I imagine that the freeways were spaceship. No, so
come to light.
And then one day, you got in. That's right, I got in.
So Tron, the original film, you had the software company called Encom, and they were doing all kinds of weird stuff where they were like experimenting on stuff, trying to digitize things and send them into like cyberspace, and you get the backstory that, like, there's a guy named Kevin Flynn, played by Jeff Bridges, who's trying to, like, hack the system. And you don't know why yet, but you know he's trying to find, like, files that's in the Encom system. But he keeps getting thwarted at every turn by something called the MCP, the Master Control Processor, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And the head of this corporation is Ed Dillinger. And he reports, it seems... he reports directly to the MCP, which is kind of weird because you don't have any of that in the second movie at all. But like in this first one, you just kind of feel like you get a sense that like you have a character that's based on Jeff Bridges in cyberspace named Clue.
Yep.
You've got a guy that's based on the Bruce Boxleitner character named Tron. And then you've got the I can't remember the other character's name, but you've got all these avatars for the human characters. But then you've got the MCP, who kind of straddles the line in both the real world and the cyber world. So Alan Bradley, which is the Bruce Boxleitner character, he runs this kind of independent security program named Tron. And if he like basically Tron's whole purpose is to root out programs that aren't benefiting the system or are kind of acting in malicious ways and taking them out. He's kind of like an antivirus. And so he goes to meet Dillinger, and Dillinger's like, look, I'm revoking your access and I'm shutting down your program for now just because we need to kind of keep a tight lid on things. But it's because the MCP has ordered him to do this. Meanwhile, the MCP's like, get me that Chinese language file and I'm going to break into the Pentagon tomorrow. And he's like, so Dillinger even recognizes the MCP is getting too big for its own good. So, you know, flash forward to Alan Bradley and his girlfriend that also works at the company. They go to see Jeff Bridges, who also used to date this girl. They go to see him at his arcade and they explain like, hey, Dillinger's doing some weird stuff. He's cutting everybody's access. And Jeff Bridges is like, just get me in there. Get me in there. I'll be able to forge you access. Get me in and I can help get the dirt on this guy. But I also need to find my own dirt. And they're like, okay, cool. So they sneak him in. And they sit him down at like what's her name's computer, and there's like the laser that digitizes things and sends them into cyberspace.
Yeah, that's how lasers work.
Yeah, the MCP look, man. There is definitely a clear line in the first Tron movie where it's like, oh, this is reasonable. I could see this happening. Nope, that is totally not going to happen.
Before people knew how technology actually functioned.
It's It's kind of like weird science where like Gary and Wyatt are like, we're going to simulate somebody with a computer and like simulate to them meant make someone come to life.
Yeah,
and
it 3D was like, print.
What are you talking about? And just nobody knew how computers work then. But so the MCP blasts Kevin Flynn and sends him into the grid, and he gets taken prisoner. He's forced to play the games. That's where he meets Tron, and they each break out of the games arena and start to make their way back to the portal where they can get out of there and they can rewrite the code and they can fight the MCP and bring peace to the grid. So mm-hmm. now we fast forward 35 years to Tron Legacy and Kevin Flynn has taken over NCOM. He's been like releasing OS systems for like for free. And, you know, he's kind of revolutionizing technology, but he's also kind of giving speeches like he's a Nazi at like technology conventions. And so he tells his kid like, hey, tomorrow we'll go to the arcade. Okay. After telling him the story about Tron and stuff, he's like, we'll go to the arcade tomorrow. And, he disappears and nobody knows where he's gone. And that kind of brings us to the story of Tron Legacy, which has a lot of echoes from the first movie. I'm sure Tess noticed, like when they break into NCOM and Jeff Bridges looks and he's like, that's a big door. Mm-hmm. And Sam in Tron Legacy is opening the door and he's like, that's a big door.
Big door.
Like,
yeah. Yep.
Little nods for the fans out there.
And there are several little nods, but the thing is they're not like obnoxious. They're subtle. They're pretty subtle. Mm-hmm. Like it's all in the wrist. That's something that Kevin Flynn says in the arcade in the first movie.
When he wins. Yeah.
But it does make me laugh that Sam Flynn, when he's breaking into NCOM, looks at the door and he's like, that's a big door. Because what we find out in the course of the story is that he does this every year on his father's birthday or on the anniversary of his father leaving. He breaks into this building and he does something. And it's like, well, he's obviously seen this door before. Does he do that every year?
Never noticed.
but so there you go. There's kind of the summary. And now you have kind of a rough outline of what Tron was leading into this movie. Tess, you being the other person that watched both movies and had never seen these before.
Yeah.
Was there, I'm imagining like a bit of a shock when you like compare seeing the first one and then going into the second one.
Oh yeah. The huge like time gap. It was like looking into a time capsule.
Yeah.
Going back to 82. Cause I tried to watch the first one like twice. I started it at like at like 2 a.m. One night, and that was a terrible idea to do that. Yeah, oh, it was very slow.
It's a slow mover.
I started it up and was like, "All right, Tron. Always heard about this. Here we go." And then I saw the first few minutes. I was like, "When did this shit come out?" And I looked, I looked it up. I was like, "Oh, 82. Here we go." And then, but I fell asleep during that time. And Joe told me, he's like, yeah, man, it's definitely a slower movie than the second one. So, yeah, you're going to want to watch that another time. But watching it during the day and seeing it, I could see why people liked it. I could, and to hear that the game came out at the same time and to see the success of the game as opposed to like the movie, I can see why it was such a big success. But it makes me wonder why they waited, what'd you say, like 35 years to put out a sequel?
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's like why it didn't get as much like success and like with people as they wanted it to.
Yeah, that first one wasn't really much of a box office success either. And it was a few years after it came out on VHS. Of course, you know, when movies came out on VHS in the 80s, it wasn't like, oh, it released in 82. And then by spring of 83, you could go pick up a copy. No, it was like,
oh, yeah, no, it was years. It was years.
3 to 5 years after a movie came out in theaters, maybe you would get a VHS copy. And so it was like a good decade before I realized that there was like, it had a cult following. I didn't see it until then. But at the time, yeah, it was like nothing anybody had seen before, just the visuals. And I said earlier that, like, you know, 82, the common man didn't really understand computers and how computers work. I think that worked in this film's favor because it was like, oh, you don't understand? Here's an explanation. Picture, you know, the little programs in there. Well, just pretend they're people. You know, the little microchip, the CPUs, pretend they're highways. He even has that monologue at the beginning of Tron Legacy. He's laying it all out. So I can see how it's easy for 1982 man to like wrap his head around computers if you like personify it. And, oh, a virus is actually like a bad person in there. And antivirus, like you said, you know, Norton is actually Tron.
Yeah.
So I think that's what it had going for it. But yeah, it is a slow movie. It is boring. Even with the visuals, like some of those shots, it's like very kind of 2001 Space Odyssey where, oh, you think our graphics are cool? You're going to watch this 3-minute shot of this ship just flying through nothingness.
They would just linger on it. It was like a bad episode of Reboot.
Reboot looked better.
but you're right. Like the fact that they would just linger on stuff forever, and it's like, okay, like almost like the filmmakers were trying to figure out, like, how do we tell this story visually that people are going to understand? So like they would almost get something shot from like 360.
Yeah.
And like, make sure you know exactly who everything is or where everything is. Mm. It suffers from a lack of score, which I notice a lot of early 80s movies do.
Right?
Where it's so silent. And then when you juxtapose that against Tron Legacy, that's like, there's always a beautiful like score that's going on, that's keeping it moving. And that's something about Tron Legacy. Is like that movie runs, I think that movie runs like 45 minutes longer than the first one, but it moves at such a good clip. Almost exclusively due to the music that Daft Punk put together.
Mm-hmm. It definitely did move along very well because it was much longer, but it didn't. It was easier to get through this than it was the first one. Like the first one took a while.
It's a good. I mean, dude. I mean, you're in an age now where like the action sequences, the games, everything looks sleeker. Everything is everything looks better. The choreography looks great. Like the disc battles are just gorgeous to look at.
They were really
my favorite sequence is the light cycle sequence in this movie.
Yeah.
And the way that it's put together, like from beginning to end, is soup to nuts, as Joel would say. Like it's the anatomy of that scene just fascinates.
I agree. Yeah, they were really leaning into the core takeaways from that first film. And that's what it was. Mm-hmm. Whether you played the game or you saw the movie, you remember the light cycles. You remember the little discs that they threw at each other. Hell, what kid in the 80s didn't have a Frisbee and throw that thing around and have Frisbee wars with your neighbors trying to like get each other out? And we were playing Tron. And you could tell that this film knows that because we're like 15 minutes in and already he's in the grid. He's doing the Frisbee toss. He's doing the light cycle. Like it's, that's literally like what the first half hour is all the stuff that you remember.
You know, and it's funny because I think it's a good 45 minutes to almost an hour in the first movie before he even gets on the grid. And in this movie, they don't waste a whole lot of time. I mean, you've got the part where he's breaking into ENCOM, which is weird, with like the most dedicated security guard ever, who like climbs up on a crane on the roof of a building. And he's like, gotcha now. I'm like, dude, just call the cops. What are you doing?
Stop. Like, it's not that worth it.
For somebody with those kind of cojones, you think he'd maybe be in a little better shape. Maybe he's done this a few times before, but nope.
Yeah, right.
Tonight's his night.
So that doesn't mean that there aren't some questions to be had, though, with like the first part of this movie when Alan comes to see Sam and he's like, hey, I got a page from your dad, came from the arcade. That phone number has been shut down for 20 years. And I'm like, okay, cool. So Sam goes to the arcade and like immediately is able to just turn the power on. And I'm like, okay, look, that place has been shut down for at least 20 years. and you're telling me like someone's still been like paying power
the bills. Yeah.
Not only that someone's been paying the power bill, and like no one came along and was like, hey, look, we're going to redevelop this block. we're going to have to get this arcade out of here because and the thing is, I'm willing to kind of suspend disbelief there because they talked about how Sam is the primary stakeholder of ENCOM. Maybe he has enough money that he's just been paying the mortgage on this thing, but why?
So that he can visit once a year and then skydive off the roof.
Yeah. Right. But I'm just talking about why keep his dad's arcade. Why have you kept this?
Well, it's a symbolic of him, of his father. It's the last remnant he has.
I don't know. I mean, he's got the quarter.
Yeah.
He's got the quarter that his dad gave him. But here's the thing that kind of got me. So I believe everything about that arcade, like the fact that he turns on the power and immediately that jukebox starts going. Mm-hmm, we hear Journey. We hear the Eurythmics.
Ms. Pac-Man.
This is great. And he goes into the hidden basement. He finds a hidden basement. Goes down there. And he finds that keyboard that built into the desk keyboard.
Mm-mm.
I'm sorry, That technology did not exist 20 years ago.
Exactly.
Well, first of all, the fact that it's not colored beige, that gives it away right there. We didn't make any computers in the 80s that weren't beige.
Right.
Or touchscreen, for that matter.
Like, and you would think supercomputer. After the first time that he got like accidentally shot into the grid, you would think Kevin Flynn would have some kind of safeguards in place.
Sticky note at least on the button.
Yeah, watch the laser behind you.
Why is that laser even there?
Why is it always behind them too?
It's always behind them.
It's like, Jesus, you're gonna get
honey, I shrunk the Tron.
So we've talked about how impressive the visuals are in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
They are definitely that. They're very impressive, except for when they're not.
Oh, yes.
And one of the worst things, and that's something like, it seemed like Disney was just hell-bent on doing this stuff around this time. And I kind of compare it to Rogue One, what they did with Peter Cushing and Carrie Fisher, where they tried to like give us a CG version of someone, but then have them interact with real actors. And I've never seen anything look as bad as the young Jeff Bridges effects that they put on this actor. Like the rubber face that like there was no actual folds in the skin. Like it made me go, why not just find an actor that looks like young Jeff Bridges? Because if you're trying to go for something that's going to impress me by making me think, oh my gosh, look, it's a young version of this actor, but you cannot make it look convincing enough, go with a younger actor that just resembles Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, I know, but then he wouldn't have the voice and he wouldn't have, that would make sense, except we've already seen young Jeff Bridges in the first movie, right? So it's like audiences who would care about that would have something to compare against. And to be fair, you know, we were 6 or 7 years away from, the technology is almost there. And yes, you're comparing it to like Rogue One and who else did it recently?
Irishman, didn't it?
The Irishman kind of did. I mean, the thing is, you're right, though, Joel. You're very right, because now I'm thinking about Avengers Endgame. You think about the Thanos effect. I mean, you look there, you look at Thanos, and you believe this is someone who's existing in this space with these people. But man, they just could not. They couldn't get it with Jeff. It's like if he didn't move, he looked fine. But the moment he started moving around and talking, it was just like, I'm so distracted.
And also, like, Jeff Bridges IRL kind of has a bit of a cartoon, like that smile. You know, and I'm talking about, like, old 82 Jeff Bridges. He's kind of cartoony looking already. And then when you're trying to mimic that, but they're exaggerating the wrong things, you know?
That's what I was just about to say. I think it's unfortunate that we don't have Lorne on with us, because I think he'd be able to speak to the caricature of what Jeff Bridges' clue is in this movie, as opposed to what Jeff Bridges is. But you're right. You know, there are still some things about Jeff Bridges' vocal performance that are so spot on. Like the flashback where Clue asks, you know, am I still to create the perfect system?
Yeah.
And you just have Jeff Bridges very casual.
Well, dude, Jen and I were joking, like, they should have just called this Tron Lebowski, because he is flat out, there are several times, he does fucking Lebowski does. There's a couple of times where he's even kind of talking about, you know, he describes things in a very 1980s way, and you know, talks about things being jazzy. And
radical.
They're just like things that Jeff Lebowski would have said.
Oh, yeah. But so you've got to deal with that with Clue, and then you have to deal with that when they do their flashbacks. And it's funny to me, because Bruce Boxleitner, like CG'd Bruce Boxleitner,
he looks fine.
Looks way better than CG'd Jeff Bridges.
I don't know why. Maybe we don't see him as closely. He doesn't really have to emote. I don't even think he has any. He speaks any lines, does he?
Yes, he does. In the flashback, he's like, "Go, I got this."
Yeah, with like one fucking line.
But the thing is, even though he has like one line, I think we need to give Bruce Boxleitner some credit for being a solid performer. Like the scenes he has with not Bo Garrett, but whatever his name is, the guy that plays Sam.
Garrett Hudlin.
Like the scene he has at his home where he's talking about it, and he's like, you know, here, take the keys to CRK. Well, what am I going to do, Alan? What? I'm just going to unlock the door, and there he is. He's going to be sitting. He's going to be, sorry, kiddo, lost track of time. And even his little delivery of his, wouldn't that be something?
Yeah.
You know, and then just walking in. Like,
smirk.
He's so genuine and so good, and I just feel like we need to be giving Bruce Boxleitner way more credit
than the
performer
that. he almost wasn't in this film too. Apparently, the first draft didn't have him in it, and it wasn't until news leaked that I know exactly. It's mind blowing. Joe's just mind just blown. But yeah, it wasn't until news leaked that there was going to be another Tron movie, and then he kind of revealed that he wasn't asked to be in it, and the fan outcry was kind of what made them reconsider that and put him back in the movie. And yeah, it's kind of more of that glue that kind of connects these two movies together, and it's not as fulfilling without him.
Right, and I mean, even to that extent, when you look at the spirit of the first film, and it's called Tron, and Tron is definitely the hero of that first film.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, Tron Legacy, and you don't really get him. But the thing is, if you're familiar with the first movie, and the first time you see Rinsler, you recognize the logo on his chest.
Oh, really? You called it, huh? See, because I didn't remember that.
I called it when I saw it the first time.
Even though I'd seen this film, I totally forgot that that was him again until they revealed it. Like an act three.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't realize it either.
if not a little unfulfilling, it's still kind of fun, that little point at the end where he kind of comes to his senses.
Yeah. Sacrifices
and he's like,
himself.
I fight for the user, brah. But it just makes me wish that we could have had a little bit more of that. And I know that, like, the character of Quora is kind of supposed to be the replacement for Tron, mm-hmm. that Flynn himself is supposed to kind of be the replacement for Tron. What I liked, going back and revisiting the first movie, there's definitely a very heavy religious undertone.
Yes.
About, like, how the users are kind of like gods. Mm-hmm. You know, they looked at the users like they're kind of like theological? No.
Yes.
Theological figures. Mm-hmm. Where... in this one, you still had that religious feel, but it was more subtle and more subdued and like not so on the surface, not played on the nose so much. You know, you have how like the air would go out of the room in the club when Flynn shows up and he kind of touches the ground and takes the power out of everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's like everything stops when Flynn enters the room. And it's really cool that, guys, the production design of this movie is just breathtaking.
It's beautiful. The art direction and that's really where the movie shines. Even if there's nothing else to grasp onto from character or story wise, you can at least appreciate on that level. It's beautiful. But I just love how they've taken all of the iconic imagery from the first one and literally done like a version 2.0 of it. Here's what we wanted to do with it.
A beautiful version of it. So, yeah. I mean, I can understand. That's why I guess them doing it so many years later does make sense, because they let the time, they let the technology and everything that they wanted to do catch up to them. It makes me a little like mad that I didn't watch it in 2010 when it originally came out, because watching it today kind of reminded me of watching Avatar when that came out and how beautiful that was visually and everything.
Yeah.
I think the reason why they waited so long, because when the first Tron came out, it was when video games were kind of at its height in the 80s. But then not long after that is when you got that video game crash.
Crashed.
Thanks to E.T. and like just, you know, some of the really bad games and like the just oversaturation of the market of bad video game alternatives.
Hey, have you watched that real quick interjection? Have you watched that documentary on Netflix now, that High Score documentary?
I haven't yet. No, I've got it in my queue.
They do an episode on the guy who made that E.T. game. And just the time crunch that he was under and everything he had going against him.
He had like 6 weeks to make the game, didn't he?
Yeah, it was ridiculous, yeah.
there was the crash. And then like video games started kind of picking back up around the Nintendo era.
Yep.
But I think video games were never as wildly popular and as accessible as they were, let's say, about circa 2010. So I think around that time, 2008, 2009, when they decided to make this movie, I think video gaming was like at an all-time high.
Oh, yeah.
And I think in order to try to kind of grasp that, that's why I think like Disney thought, hey, let's bring Tron back. I think we're ready. I mean, all the people that watched this movie when they were kids are all video game playing adults now.
Right.
And they're teaching their kids about the classic games now that they're playing, you know, newer ones. They're getting them involved in the classic games. So I kind of think that was like a product of the time is why they decided to do it.
Did they release a Tron Legacy video game alongside coincide?
Yeah.
I was just called to ask that.
It was called Tron Evolution. And it was a story that kind of took place like Tron Legacy adjacent. Mm. Like it was kind of a story that was going on parallel to what was going on.
It's like what they did
Tron
with the Matrix
movie. Yeah, and it was a good game. It was a super fun game. But they had other games leading up to this. There was a game called Tron Killer App that was like an FPS that came out on the PC that like Rebecca Romaine Stamos was in. And
what?
Like, but it was for years and years, they've been gauging interest in Tron by releasing some of these other games to kind of see like, hey, how's this doing? How's this going to go? And I guess they never really sold well. So it's still surprising to me that they made a sequel. It hurts my heart because I feel like this movie definitely was leading up to some potential. You know, the way that they end it, you're kind of led to believe that he's got the grid on his in his necklace, that his father is still saved somewhere in his necklace. It's so funny because they talk about like, well, he's gonna die if he's in here. They're gonna get him, and I'm like, well, just go back to a previous save state.
there you go. We do it all the time on my SNES Classic.
We do it all the time. Go back to a previous save. So there's that. There's also like the fact that they were building up with like with Cillian Murphy playing Ed Dillinger's son.
What the hell? I forgot he was in this and all, and he's like in one scene.
Yeah,
in one scene. It was so funny because watching this in the theater, I see him as Ed Dillinger's son, and I'm like, okay, so obviously he's going to show up at some point. Like the digital version of him is going to show up in the grid, and he never does. And I'm like, oh, so what's going on with that? So that's, I'm like, okay, obviously they're saving that for a third movie, which never happens.
Well, never say never, Joe, because, the whole reason we're doing this episode is because they have announced a Tron 3. It is in pre-production. It's supposed to come out in 2021, but COVID being what it is, that may not happen. But, it is official. We will be getting a Tron 3 starring Jared Leto.
Really? So wait, is it going to be a reboot or is it a sequel to this movie?
I mean, so it's not called Tron 3 and there's some rumors out there about what the actual title is, but if they're bringing Jeff Bridges back, they're holding it close to the vest. Or maybe they're still in negotiations. It's still so early out. They're probably not going to bring back Garrett Hedlund, I can tell you that.
Really? Were you not a fan?
No, he's fine. He's good at what he does. You want like a Han Solo type character? He's fine. My quibbles with this film have nothing to do with the actors or their performances for the most part, you know, except for the CG Jeff Bridges. It's more about just kind of like the, and I don't even really mind the story. It really kind of comes down to execution because for a movie about like kind of a father-son relationship, And this kind of underlying deity theme that's going on with, you know, the users versus the programs had a lot of potential there, but I found it kind of soulless. Like I've sat there thinking like I should be feeling more in this film than it's making me feel. And maybe it's because I don't have as close an affinity to the original or even the video game as other fans do. He's got a big cult following. But I got to admit, Joe, I found, even on second viewing, found the film a little tedious, a little long for me.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah. So it's funny that you said that because apparently the original version of Tron Legacy was missing any of that father-son connection.
No.
They didn't have any of that going on, and they ended up bringing in Brad Bird to punch it up.
Really?
And and he punched things up to kind of build up that father-son relationship. Apparently he wrote all that, like that beginning part where like Kevin Flynn is sitting in his son's bedroom and telling him the story of Tron and like kind of trying to build that nostalgia. And he also wrote the scene on the Solar Sailor where like where Sam and Kevin are actually kind of finally talking about things. And it's one of my favorite scenes because of the, just the natural dialogue between the two where it's like, you know, so, I'm fixing up the Ducati and like Kevin Flynn's like, you busted my bike.
Yeah. No, you're right. That is one of the best scenes between the two of them. It just doesn't go very deep. Like, there's not a lot of conflict other than just like, oh, you left when I was a kid. Like, I feel like he should be more bitter at his dad.
Should matter.
And then when he realizes that he didn't leave him, like, there needed to be more there.
You know what?
And
conflict.
The movie's too caught up with this whole, oh, we have to get his disc off his back so that we can get Olivia Wilde into the real world. Which I have many questions about, by the way, but go ahead.
Okay. No, so I guess I feel like the typical way to have taken this movie is to have Sam be bitter towards his father.
Sure.
Yeah. And I thought it was interesting that like Sam's a smart kid and he's able to kind of piece things together and he figures out like, oh, my dad was trapped here. He's been trapped here because of Clue. And I like that he's good with his dad up until the point where he finds out his dad is in no hurry to get out of there and do anything. Like he's just been sitting on his hands the whole time and won't do anything. And I think the fact that that's what kind of sets him off. And he's like, well, shit, if my dad is going to do something, I'm going to get the fuck out of here so I can take Clue out. I can get to the computer and take Clue out of the equation. So I kind of dug that. Where I have a problem with the story is that when you're calling your movie Tron,
yeah.
I'm sorry. I feel like Tron should be a much more central character.
Now,
he's a beloved character from the first.
You do plan to have Tron in your Tron movie.
In your Tron sequel. And they didn't. And I think that's a huge misstep. The fact that like Flynn was a main character of the first movie, but only to the extent where he felt like he was kind of a passenger on Tron's journey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And to give the keys to Flynn entirely didn't feel right. Almost as if like, I feel like the actual Kevin Flynn, I'm fine with him being in like solitude and kind of being the Obi-Wan Kenobi of this world.
Yeah,
if you're going to do that, you should have some moments where Kevin Flynn is teaching his son how he does the things he does. Like when Kevin Flynn is touching the window and like making code pop up out of nowhere and adjusting it. It would have been cool to see that, I guess, just kind of building on. And like you said, like it didn't seem like they spent a whole lot of time developing the father-son thing. None. And I think that speaks to the time that Brad Bird had to work on the script.
Yeah.
I think they gave it to him and he's like, I've got 4 hours, guys. I can do this. But had they taken a little more time and seen, we could see, you know, Kevin teaching his son, okay, do this. This is all right. So what are you doing, Dad? I'm finding her bad code. You could find that by doing like teaching him how he's fixing Cora after she loses her arm. Like I think that would speak a little bit more to the movie. So it doesn't have to be Tron like physically or literally, but in the spiritual sense, it seemed like everything that Tron represented in the first movie was missing in this.
Yeah, I agree.
Completely. And I mean, Joel, you were right about the relationship between both of them, because he wasn't mad at all when this is the first time you've seen your father in years. And it seemed like he got over that pretty quickly.
When he saw
like
Clue.
Very soon, he was just like,
when he saw Clue, he was like, Dad.
Nope.
Dad, it's you. Like, no, I'm not your dad. It's like, and then he sees his actual dad and then he hugs him and everything. He's like, oh man, I'm just so happy to see you. I mean, I get that, but come on, man. Like, Dad, what the fuck? You didn't try to come back. He didn't have any, there was no real conflict between them. And then as it goes along, he does teach him some things, but as you said, it's not really him being like, yeah, let me be a father and teach you this because, you know, you're probably going to take over after I die, which is about to happen anyway. And then he just basically, all right, well, bye, son.
Peace out.
Like, I know you came here to save me. It's like, peace out. Live your life without me.
The thing is, through the dialogue, he says stuff like, he's like, I'd give it all up if I could just have one more day with you. And it's like, okay, you have that
you
day.
Could.
Yeah.
You're having that day right
Let's
now.
Go.
And the thing is, like, the movie tells us, but it never shows us.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, I agree, that's a frustrating aspect to it.
I wonder if Rian Johnson actually got some inspiration for The Last Jedi from here, because, you've got kind of that, the reluctant old wise man, and the newbie who needs to be trained come in, and he won't train him slash her. Even to the look, like Jeff Bridges at the end of this looks like an old Luke Skywalker with the flowing robe, and he's basically doing like some Jedi power shit.
Yeah, he is. Mm. That's true. I do like when like Sam has this moment. I think it's when they're in the elevator and he's like, Dad, I'm sorry, Dad, can you help me? Dad. And Jeff Bridges looks at him. He's like, Sam, you're really messing with my Zen thing, man.
Again, Tron Lebowski.
Dude. You know, that's it. Like the story. I think the story moves fine. I think the story's good. I think that there's enough eye candy that's going on in this movie. And ultimately, I think that's what Tron needs to be. It more than anything, it needs to be eye candy, and it succeeds in that respect. I mean, this movie, whether you realize it or not, this movie ended up setting the tone for movies that came after it. Like, you had this movie called Hannah starring Saoirse Ronan.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, that came out right after this, that also had like a soundtrack from the Dust Brothers. I can't remember what they were called.
You're right.
But they did this like whole techno soundtrack to this action movie, and it was totally done in this like Daft Punk style. And I think that it kind of like it would then set the tone for action movies, for sci-fi action movies that we would see come after this. And so I think there's plenty to be impressed by and plenty to be thankful for when it comes to Tron Legacy. I do think that for something that's been for a movie that like the first movie was like 35 years before.
Yeah.
You have plenty of time to bang out a much more substantial sequel in regards to character development. And they did fall short when it came to that.
I think the beats were pretty much all there. It looks good on paper for the most part. Mm-hmm. What I need a little more of, not being a huge Tron fan per se, and the huge gap, the 35-year gap, and technology having come how far it had, I needed a little more fleshing out of the world, and I needed some more of these kind of rules laid down, because the original Tron is like a technology movie, but for a very analog age, and you know we're kind of now in the digital age. People understand computers and CPUs a little bit better, and they could have used that opportunity to kind of flesh the world out a little bit, explain what kind of the rules are. Instead, it's just kind of all magic. And listen, hey, I'm fine with that. If you wanted to kind of have some of that mysticism, I'm fine with that. It doesn't all have to be explained, you know, to, as they say in Star Trek, you know, to primitive civilizations, technology seems like, what did you say?
That's right.
No, but you know, to primitive civilizations, technology seems like magic. So you can kind of build into that a little bit, but I need explain to me how Olivia Wilde, Cora is her character's name, right?
How
is she able, and to that end, Clue, because his whole goal is he's trying to make it to our world, right? He's trying to come into the real world.
Yeah.
But never in this movie or the previous movie do they kind of explain how, because now we're talking about like matter, you know?
Yeah.
How is this computer, you can't just like push a button, because now we're in weird science territory, and we've come a long way from weird science.
Well, the thing is, I think if you're willing to accept that, that if someone can get beamed into a computer, I think that's half the battle right there. That for two movies now, we've accepted that Jeff Bridges has been beamed into this computer. Now his son has been beamed in, and it's almost like for matter taken, you can also give matter back. And since Kevin Flynn didn't take the ride back, there was still matter that was to be given back. And so since she was there with Sam, she had the disc of a user, she's able to go back.
So, but does that mean like when she comes back, she would have looked like Sam? Looked
like Kevin Flynn. And that's a good question. You know, honestly,
gross.
That's what it should have been, because it should have been Cora's consciousness inside of Jeff Bridges' body.
Yeah, like what the Matrix movies did.
Yeah.
When
Agent
Smith finally made it into the real world.
Because it's a movie about going into computers and having light cycles and light planes and disc battles.
I know, but
ultimately you can't dig too deep into stuff
That. And yet The Matrix, a movie that came out 10 years prior to it, was able to have it both ways. I think audiences expected a little more in 2010.
The Matrix was telling a different story than what Tron was telling. You know, Tron was basically the last action hero of going into a computer and playing video games. And The Matrix was, you know, real heady, like, you know, existentialism.
I'm just saying audiences today are a little more savvy, and what passed in 1982 isn't going to pass in a post-Matrix world.
And I think that maybe that was part of the problem. They were still trying to write it for a 1982 audience. Like, we've got this cool, hip, updated version of Tron, but we can't make it too complicated.
Yeah.
You know, it's still Tron. I can't entirely fault it for that, because it's Disney, and if you don't think Disney's going to play it safe, you haven't been paying attention to Disney.
Yep.
But I think at the same time, I do agree with you. I think had they had the balls to take some chances.
Joe, knowing now that there will be a Tron 3, and what a big fan you are, where would you like to see? What would you do? What would Joe Cucinotti's Tron 3 look like?
I think, I like Tron Legacy so much that I think you're going to do it a disservice if you let it just end there. We need to know what happens with Kevin Flynn. We need to know what happens to Tron. Does he get recovered from the sea of simulation or whatever it's called? After he's turned on Clue and he sinks and the red color goes away and he becomes blue again.
Yeah.
Like, does he come back? Like, it's called Tron. What happens to Tron? And like the grid, where does the grid end up? I feel like those are questions I have. So unless you're going to answer those questions, you might want to just reboot the franchise entirely.
Ooh, maybe that's what they'll call it. Tron Reboot.
Yeah. Mm. That's so creative.
It's meta.
So meta.
So yeah, it's either, I guess with me, it's all or nothing. Like, either give me the answers to the questions you've set up in the second movie or just start over. Do a Spider-Man on it and just start over again.
Andrew Garfield is Tron.
Andrew Garfield would be a good Tron, I think. Actually, it's not bad. I don't think he would be bad. Going back to it, I still have such a great time. I could watch this movie over and over again. There are certain points of this movie that I can watch over and over again. The light cycles, the light jets.
Oh, yeah.
The disc battle. I love when there's clearly a point in this movie where Sam Flynn becomes very confident in himself. And when he goes to save Korra, and he just like manhandles these programs and saves her and then like flies down, crashes down, him and Korra working together to take out Rinsler. Like, oh dude, like
there's
so many fun moments. I can't stand Olivia Wilde, but I
love her. Joe, are you kidding me? Am I just learning this about you for the first time?
I'm not a big Olivia Wilde fan.
Why? Why?
As an actor. Not as an actress. I just don't like her as an actress. I don't think she's a very good actress. Wow. I don't buy her. I liked her. She did a House or a couple seasons.
But yeah, 13. House
that I kind of dug her in that. But other than that, like, I don't think I've liked her in anything else. But I liked her as Korra. I think she's good in this role.
I would agree, but I also like her in everything else as well. I think she's a talent. And obviously talent behind the camera as well, having directed last year's Booksmart. Which is
she's going to be doing Spider-Woman.
She's a treasure. She's the national treasure, Joe.
That's right. I heard about that too.
She's got a treasure map printed on her.
Well, since we're talking about Korra, so my question: so is she basically kind of like his sister? Since Kevin Flynn's the creator,
Because they explain that he didn't actually create her.
Yeah, she's an isomorphic algorithm.
What she is she's the one that gets carried over. Like
that's
basically what the isotopic algorithms are. They're like the leftover quotient that they ended up having to kind of do things with. And so she's not a product of Kevin Flynn. She's something entirely new that the system created. And that's why Clue wanted to eradicate them, because they weren't part of the plan.
Okay. See, I know they explained that, but I understood but didn't understand that.
A real Jesus story there, huh?
About the whole ISOs or ISPs?
ISOs.
Yeah. She's an internet service provider.
Yeah, exactly. I guess I'm very disappointed that she talks about like this. She's like, there was a program that fought with us in the Purge and we should go see him. And it's the Michael Sheen character, Castor or Zeus, who, by the way, just chewing up scenery in this movie. He's doing so good. I loved him in this role. But
this is the first thing I remember seeing him in.
Oh, mine. I think my first was Frost Nixon.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. But seeing him in this and like dancing around is like everybody's fighting and Kevin Flynn shows up and he's like, it's our, you know, the son of our creator. And he just starts shooting up the place. Like, he's just so nuts. And like his David Bowie style that he's trying to emulate in this movie is just insane. But I guess I was disappointed because I'm like, this is a guy that like fought on the side of the ISOs. Like he fought to help them.
And now
he's just like reduced to a coward, like sniveling.
Yep, in it for himself.
They allude to a lot of things in this movie that are so interesting that I wish we could have seen them rather than just hear about them. Mm-hmm. Like this whole Purge, the war that Clue brings to the system, like, I really wish we could have seen that in some of the flashbacks instead of just like Kevin Flynn creating Clue and then walking off into the distance and Kevin Flynn with Tron and Tron getting kicked, you know, getting killed and turned into Rinzler. Like, I guess I wish we could have seen a little bit more of like what developed this land.
What if that's Tron 3? Tron 3, The Purge. Jeez, what if they did that?
That'd one night every year in the grid.
Everything goes.
You can delete any program you want.
That's right.
I choose a Microsoft Office.
So ultimately, Tess, what were your thoughts?
I loved it, man.
Wow. I definitely loved it.
Well, I mean, as opposed to the first one, it was much better than that. And at the time that this movie came out, I saw a lot of people talking about it. Like, I remember that. And what is this? Like 10 years later, I can understand why people enjoyed it and why it was a movie that even if you hadn't seen the first one, you can find enjoyment in this story and watching it for 2 hours. Yeah.
This was the critics panned the performances pretty hardcore.
That's surprising.
I think the critics were pretty, they were pretty positive about the visuals. I think everybody was felt the same way about the young Jeff Bridges effects. I think that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way.
There's a lot of gifs.
Imagine this. You've seen it on a small screen, Tess. Imagine seeing that on a big screen that really like shows off the weaknesses and the seams of that. It's a little rough. Would you guys recommend this movie?
Yeah, I would. Yeah. Definitely. Mm-hmm. It's like I said, it's one of those movies that you should go back and watch the 82 film, the original, to understand the main characters. But it's also something that, like you were saying, they left out Tron, who's the name person of this entire movie. So clearly you can watch this movie not knowing what went on in the first one, or at least get a recap of what happened.
Sure. Joel?
Man, that's a tough one because this has some moment. I would say if there's like a supercut on YouTube that has some of the best visual effects and those action scenes, that's probably the most that this film has to offer because I don't think the story's great. I love the world. I love the concept of it more than I do kind of the execution. As a film, as a complete 2 hour piece of cinema, I think it falls short. It's hard to recommend, especially if you aren't already a Tron fan. Tessa, I'm glad that you saw the first one, but I kind of would have been interested to know coming in blind, like what somebody would think of this. And actually, Jenna's a little bit of that too, because she never saw the first one. She saw this one on cable years ago and then revisited with me today. And both of us were kind of nonplussed or plussed. I always forget which is which.
I guess I should have watched it backwards. That would have been a little interesting to watch this one first. Yeah, to watch it backwards. That would have been nice.
That's a horrible machete order. I mean, obviously, I would recommend this movie. This movie's beautiful. I think it's like just as to look at and to hear. There are very few movies that I feel like you need to experience it. You don't watch this movie; you experience it. And I mean, God, it speaks to me on so many levels. But that the way that the visuals and the music all kind of fit together in a perfect piece of harmony. Yeah, the story doesn't make the most sense, and the character motivations don't make the most sense, and they're not complete. But as far as a sci-fi film that has like enough action, enough heart, and enough compelling storyline to go along, I think that this movie's great. And you absolutely should check this movie out. What did this film do right?
There's a lot of things that I think it did right. And I know we're all going to talk about the visual effects. I'll be the person to talk about the music. How about that? Because I think the scores is the best thing for me personally that this film has to offer. I love the score. I remember when it came out in 2010, the place I was working with at the time, we were all listening to it like out loud and digging it and hadn't really heard anything like it. Well, that's not true, but not in film score. It was a great merging of the techno and the digitized feel, but then supported with this, you know, full orchestral score. And it was a nice merging of those two worlds, and man, it lives on its own. And I still to this day will listen to a couple of tracks off that film. I love the score.
It's a score that definitely understands the film that it's supposed to be a part of.
That's a good way to put it.
Living in a time where every movie like this would have had like a John Williams score or some John Williams clone.
The original did, right?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Did it?
Well, I mean, what little score it had, it was...
Yeah. There's so many moments of silence in that movie.
Quiet.
But no, like to have the forethought to go like, hey, let's get Daft Punk and let's have them just go nuts with the music. And in fact, let's put them in the movie.
Yeah, they have a cameo.
Yeah, love them.
Well, their heads do.
What do you think, Ted?
Well, for me... Having seen the first one right before it, I believe that it was a good sequel movie, even though it came out like years later. So I mean, and what I mean by that is that it had the original story. And I mean, for a person like you, Joe, who is a big Tron fan, you were able to see all the different things that you loved in the first one a little bit, like little aspects of that in the second one. And I mean, and we also touched on this earlier about the idea that what they tried to do with the first one, they were able to like really execute that with the second one, at least visually, and with the technology being more on their side with this one. So, from the music, the visuals, and just being a sequel, everything together was just good for me.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. So obviously my first answer would have been the score, Daft Punk score to this movie is just insane. Mm-hmm. But I think that what I'm going to say that this movie does right is that it does take the story of, and it doesn't do it to like the greatest effect, but what it does is it takes that first Tron movie, which is what it is. It's kind of a tech demo. It's an action movie that like was trying to take advantage of new effects at the time.
It's the PS1 of visual effects movies.
Yeah. It's the N64 of visual effects movies. But the thing is, that movie doesn't have a whole lot of heart. This movie has heart. Like you bring it from 1982 to 2010. You start off with Sam Flynn, and you know, kind of a troubled youth. You have the moment with him and Alan. You're already seeing some heart. You're bringing it into the grid, where he's trying to find his father. He thinks he finds his father, relating with his father, even though like I said, you're not getting as much of that as you deserve, but you're still getting some heart with it. And the fact that they take the things that we liked about that first movie, though, and like seeing the disc battles and how binary and like just, you know, one for one that like the disc battle is, like they play Hidelight, I think, in the first movie. And it's like, what are they doing?
Basic. And
clearly using frisbees in the first.
Yeah.
But like to take it, and then like you see just the way that it, and the thing is, I think one of you said like there wasn't any world building in this movie, and I disagree to an extent, because if this movie isn't doing anything in the first few minutes he's in the grid, it's building this world. Like he's on the recognizer, and we never see the recognizer move the way that it's moving in this, and the way that it's kind of covering over the cityscapes, we get an idea of the landscape of what the grid is now. To take those things that were in 82 that were kind of awe-inspiring and jaw-dropping, and fleshing it out and beefing it up, and not just making it bigger for bigger's sake, but making it more tangible, I think is just it takes an insane amount of creativity. But then to kind of tie that together to a story about the son redeeming the father, I think to me, it takes it over the top, and it obviously speaks to me in a different way than it speaks to you, Joel, or that it speaks to Tess, even to that, for that matter.
Sure.
I just think that the innovations that it made and the steps that it took to get to where it was from 1982 to what we got in 2010, I think is ultimately overly impressive. Fair and enough. I love this film. All right. So what did the movie do wrong?
Well, I'll go ahead and say it. It's that CG Jeff Bridges, man. That is not it immediately takes you out of the film every time you see him. There, like I said, it's highly memeable. There are several GIFs that you can find if you just search for Tron, Jeff Bridges, of his bad plasticky feel. So it's hard to accept him as another person. I don't know what the solution would have been, because like you said, even in 2020 with
a younger actor.
But then you
get a lookalike, and don't worry about it. You just get a lookalike.
But then the complaint will be he's no Jeff Bridges.
But that's the complaint, you know, and I feel like easier complaint to stomach is that, like, here's the thing. Maybe get a younger actor to play Kevin Flynn in the flashbacks
so that we can tie
and use young Jeff Bridges so that as Clue, so that way we kind of have a visual representation of course he looks artificial. It's Clue, you know, he's a computer program.
Or just like maybe say that, you know, his consciousness got put into a different body or something like that. There's a bunch of things you could have did around that to where it would have looked better.
Workarounds. No, I agree. I think there are workarounds, but ultimately it was just use a younger actor. Use a lookalike.
Yeah. Someone looks better than that.
Tess, what do you
think? Well, I mean, yeah, the visual, the Bridges, I mean, that was terrible. That was awful. But I guess for me, though, probably the Garrett Hudlin, like our Sam Flynn.
Oh, no.
I really didn't care for him too much as our lead. Like he had a, because I mean he wasn't terrible, he wasn't bad, but I mean I love Olivia Wilde, so she was great in this role, and also I mean Bridges, he was great in the role that he in both of the roles he was doing.
I agree.
As Kevin and also as Clue, but then when you get to Sam, he was the worst out of like all of the lead characters, and he even had a bunch of lines that he delivered that I was like, bro, come on, really?
I think one of the things he was suffering from, though, and I don't know if you guys noticed it, but it seemed like he was trying to like affect Jeff Bridges like cadence, like the way he. It looked like he was trying to affect that. It looked like he was trying to like put his mouth in the same positions that Jeff Bridges does.
And he was trying to make a bunch of things more dramatic at times. Yeah. Than it was like, bro, just move along with this.
There's the part where Cora asks him to describe the sunset.
Oh yeah,
and he's like, the sun, man.
Like, it's like it's like dog.
But I'm like, why are you delivering this so slow?
Like, what's speak to today?
Jeff Bridges rubs off on people, man.
Yeah. So what this movie did wrong, obviously, again, Joel touched on what I was originally going to say in it.
Sorry,
Jeff Bridges. No, don't be sorry. It's obvious. Rubber Jeff Bridges' face. But the other thing this movie did wrong is that it didn't highlight Tron. It didn't highlight Tron physically. And in lieu of that, it didn't highlight Tron spiritually. You were missing that element from beginning to end, other than the fact that like that scene between Alan and Sam at Sam's house, which to me was one of my favorite moments. And it's a shame that that's Bruce Boxleitner's best moment, other than the fact at the end where like Sam has called him to show up in his pajamas at Flynn's arcade.
Yes.
And then guys, I don't know if you noticed, like Sam and Cora ride off and Alan comes out the door and there's no car there.
Like,
he's by himself. And my nightmare scenario that I run through in my head is he's like, first off, he's like, oh, guys, can you give me never mind. He goes back into the arcade, finds Flynn's little basement, and then gets himself
into the game. Oh, my God.
And that's Tron 3. There you go. Bruce by Boxleitner.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no. That just not having that missing element.
That's funny.
Called Tron. You got to highlight Tron somehow.
Yeah.
If we were going to remake this movie today, how would we do that, guys?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a theme here that
I kind of do.
You do as well, Joe?
Yeah, I kind of do. Yeah.
Mm. I have people from similar things, but I don't have a theme.
Mm.
Well, yeah. All right.
I kind of want to get mine out of the way because it works if you roll them all out at once. So if you don't mind. Jen and I were watching this, and like I said, she was about as into it as I was, and she said, you know, this reminds me a lot of another movie that I'd rather be watching, and that was Ready Player One, which came out a couple years ago. So my recast is the cast of Ready Player One. So for Alan Bradley, we have Mark Rylance is the guy's name. He's the one who plays the deceased creator of the Oasis from Ready Player One. He would be great there. Jem... we haven't talked about her, but she's a caster.
Oh, yes. Jem, I didn't even recast her.
I recast Jem just because Hannah John Kamen from Ready Player One, I think, would fit well in that role. She is kind of the bad guy's right hand woman. She was also in the Ant-Man versus the Wasp movie.
That's right.
As the ghost. For Caster, I went with Simon Pegg in that role. How about that?
Nice. Oh, that's really good.
Mm-hmm. Quora, I went with, of course, Olivia Cooke, who plays, was Artemis? Is that her name in Ready Player One? I think so.
Yeah.
And then Sam will be Ty Sheridan, of course. And then I think Flynn slash Clue could be played by Ben Mendelsohn. He has been the...
God, that's so good.
He's like the... He's been the villain in every movie in like the last 5 years, I feel like, including Ready Player One.
He was also like a good guy, though, in Captain Marvel. That's he was right. One of the Skrulls.
In near unrecognizable through all that makeup. But yeah, that's what made me think, you know what? This guy's really endearing, and he can play a good guy when he needs to. So I'd love to see the yin and the yang of Ben Mendelsohn in that role. So there you go. Like all that directed by Steven Spielberg, of course.
Okay, nice. Cool. Tess, you want to go next?
All right. Well, I don't have a theme. So for my Bartik, that one character who had a very small scene in the little fight area, I went with Sterling K. Brown for that. Just because I love Sterling K. Brown.
Wait, he's who's Bartik? There. Who's that?
He was that guy who got into an argument who was like, we need to see Zeus. You need to let us through to see Zeus. Yeah, gotcha. That was that guy.
Joe, he's the one black guy in this film.
Yeah, it's, Joe, it's come happening. On. I thought you would have known by me picking Sterling K. Brown.
What are you talking about? There's two black women that get Sam dressed up for the game.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they were in whiteface. So, I mean.
Oh, my God.
But next, my Rensler character will be played. Well, since, you know, I didn't see his face the entire time, he'd be played by none other than Pedro Pascal, the Mandalorian.
Oh, great. That role,
you know, and next I have my Caster role, and that will be played by Jim Carrey, because after seeing him in the new Sonic, I feel like he'd be great for that role.
That's so great.
And next we have Jim. I put Brie Larson in that role.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, I feel like she's just cute, and she'd make that role. She'd be okay in that role. I almost went with Gal Gadot, but I was like, no, like that was a minor role that I'm like, Brie Larson, you can do that one. That'd be good for you. Jarvis, I want David Cross for that role.
That's so good.
Oh my God. And that goes off of just watching Kimmy Smith and seeing him in the few episodes he was on in there, and how that'd be funny. Next, for my Alan Bradley slash Tron character, I went with Michael Gross for that character.
From Family Ties?
Yeah. Well, and all, yeah, the dad from Cool as Ice. Just because, yeah. I mean, I feel like he'd be okay in that role. He's a nice, wholesome gentleman. You know, he'd fit the Tron role very well. And now I'm down to my last three. Starting with Korra, I went Vanessa Hudgens. For that role.
Oh, that's great.
Because she'd be cute. She'd be nice in that.
Yeah.
And Kevin Flynn will be played by Kurt Russell, because I feel like his hair, he'd be able to slick that hair back.
Hell yeah.
Just like he was doing, just like the Big Lebowski did in this.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess in my starring role, this would be played by Zac Efron, to just go off the chemistry that he has with Vanessa Hudgens, and just because I feel like he'd play that role much better than the Hudlin guy did.
That's right. Gotcha. I forgot they were in High School Musical together.
Yes, they were. Oh yeah, and also fun enough, directed by Steven Spielberg as well, because of Ready Player One.
Okay, there you go. I went a completely different direction. Well, not a completely different direction, but I just cast on the fly. I cast Jim, would be played by Tessa Thompson.
Okay,
that's good. My You're about to get it. My Jarvis would be played by Taika Waititi.
Ah, nice.
My Zeus Castor would be played by Jemaine Clement.
Of course.
The character of Korra would be played by Allison Brie. The Alan Bradley Rensler Tron character, played by Denzel Washington. That's the one that's going to throw things off.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. I feel like for this movie, Rensler Tron is more just, you just needed the voice. I didn't need Denzel in the costume. I just needed him to be older Alan, but also to have that voice. And I think Denzel's got a good voice for it. So my clue, because I'm sticking to my guns, you get an actor that's younger that looks like the younger version of somebody else. And it's funny because Joel kind of touched on this earlier in the episode. My clue, played by Sebastian Stan, which means my Kevin Flynn
would be Mark
Luke
Hamill.
Skywalker himself. That's a great idea. Yeah, I love those side-by-side comparisons of young Mark Hamill and Sebastian, the Winter Soldier.
They look so much
uncanny.
Alike. But speaking of someone who looks like a younger version of an older actor, I went with the younger version of Jeff Bridges and cast Chris Hemsworth as my Sam Flynn character.
Okay.
The director of this, obviously, Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
By Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
Now, that's great because they won the Oscar for The Social Network in 2010, the same year it came out. And I like that score. I appreciate it for what it is, but I really felt like this film was robbed because you put those two next to each other, there's just so much more sonically going on and melodically with the Tron score. The score to Social Network is basically fucking Trent Reznor just like hitting a note on a piano every 5 minutes.
Now, I mean, I don't want to take anything away from him because his score for the Watchmen TV show is outstanding.
Oh, he does good stuff.
The work he's done there is just insane. But no, you're right. The score to Social Network, while fine, does not like, it doesn't live in this like harmonious place that the Daft Punk soundtrack lives in. Like I said, you could take all the dialogue out of this movie and just have it be the soundtrack and the visuals. Like just watch the movie with the score and it's still a satisfying experience. So if you have any thoughts about Tron Legacy, if you have thoughts about what we've said, if you want to talk about something we haven't even touched on, go to our Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/editingbay or in the search bar on Facebook, go ahead and type in the editing bay. Find that image of the woman with the bleeding eyes. Click on that. That's where you can talk back to us. Let us know what you thought about the movie. And if you've got ideas for movies for us to watch in the future, you go ahead and put your suggestions there. We've also got a website, right, Joel?
Absolutely. It's not the editing bay. It's not edit bay. It's editingbay.com. When you go there, you're going to find links to our social networks, the aforementioned Facebook page, as well as our Twitter handle, at the editing bay. Follow us there. What else do we have there? You can subscribe right to the podcast with a little button for Apple Podcast right there. You can subscribe there or your favorite podcasting app. We also have links to all of our past episodes in the little archive section there. And all that and more on editingbay.com.
Guys, please leave us a rating and review on your podcasting app. 5-star rating would be fantastic. And then just leave us a little review. Let us know what you think about the podcast. You know what? If there's something you think we could be doing better, go ahead and put your criticism there. That's fine. Just make it 5-star criticism. We're good because you know what? If you leave less than 5 stars, you're a damn dirty imperfection and Clue needs to clean you out.
Oh, delete.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
delete.
You need to be derezzed, right?
All right. So I know I was going to try to circle back around, and this is going to end up being one of those situations where we keep talking about this movie. Apologies to Matt Damon. I know we were going to do Runaway, but I think we're going to put a pin in that one again because there's a movie that's been going it's been getting dragged through the mud. It's been getting a lot of criticism, a lot of people talking about how it's a gateway to kiddie porn. And in fact, Sarah ended up getting involved in some backs and forth on social media talking about this movie because she, after seeing like the outcry on this movie, she decided to check it out and was like, this isn't what anybody thinks it is at all.
I read her post.
Hopefully I can get her to come on with us to talk about a little bit more. But next week, I want to talk about this movie, Cuties, that's on Netflix, a 2020 French coming-of-age comedy drama about, you know, these young girls who are part of a dance troupe that, you know, I will say I've seen, like, the way that Netflix is advertising this movie in the European markets, but then seeing how they market it on, like, their U.S. market, and, like, they're definitely using, like, the weird, like... Hey, check out at least in the still shots, it's like, look at their butts.
Yeah, it's a very JonBenet Ramsey feel, right?
It is. But that's neither here nor there. People are talking about how the film is a gateway to pedophilia and, you know, it's giving people permission to sexualize young girls. And I think it would be excellent if we took a look at this movie and gave it our honest opinions. The IMDb score on this movie, 2.3 out of 10.
Oh, no.
But Rotten Tomatoes gives it a 90%. Uh-huh. Metacritic gives it a 67%. This is all across, like, this is all over the place, guys. So I think that we'd be doing ourselves a great disservice if we don't watch this movie and give our thoughts.
Controversial. Love it.
Yeah. So you could check this out on Netflix, unless they've taken it down.
In which case, next week, Runaway on the editing bay.
And then we'll address the whole hashtag cancel Netflix controversy. Jeff, thank you very much, sir. Tess, your name is Tess. Good job, buddy.
Yeah, man.
Nolo, it's a pleasure.
The pleasure is all mine.
Guys, we'll check you next week for Cuties. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
That's fucking gold.